You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, May the 24th. Do you work with or work for a real creep, a loudmouth, a pain in the neck, or lower? While there are all sorts of names for the people who are rude, selfish, uncivil, and mean-spirited, those people who really don't care about who they step on, our guest uses a really blunt term in the title of his book, one that might be a little offensive to sensitive ears, so we will avoid saying it on the radio. He is the author of The No A-Hole Rule. We will find out from him how to build a civilized workplace and how to survive one that isn't. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number if you'd like to join in. Do you have one of these a-holes in your workplace? How do you deal with him or her? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or talk at WPR.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Robert Sutton, Ph.D., a professor of management science and engineering at Stanford University. He's consulted for numerous Fortune 500 companies, including IBM, McDonald's, and Procter & Gamble. He has written for Business Week, the Harvard Business Review, the Financial Times, and other major publications. And he is the author of The No A-Hole Rule, Building a Civilized Workplace and Surviving One That Isn't. And he joins us from California this morning, right?
Right. Good morning.
Good morning. You're certainly a very kind fellow for joining us so early in the morning. Am I the only one who's a little bit nervous on the radio to actually say the name of your book, the title of your book?
You're actually less nervous than other people. The New York Times and other parts of NPR, we just have used the word jerk and the like, so you've got more courage than other stations.
Well, we'll see after I get fined.
We'll be careful.
There are a lot of names for these people, but the title of your book is what we might really say under our breath about,
right.
So how big a problem is this?
Well, the usual title that academics who study this kind of behavior in the workplace, the United Kingdom, they tend to use the word bullying, and in the United States, it tends to be abusive supervision or abusive workplaces. And if you look at some of the better national samples and representative samples I've seen lately, a recent one that was a national probability sample, it looks like one out of two Americans have worked for an abusive boss. And then there was actually a great study of Michigan, which is nearby Wisconsin, and it turns out that in that sample, about one out of five Michiganders faced what they would describe as constant psychological abuse in the workplace, so at least a couple of times a week. So those are the best samples I know in the United States. So that's pretty frequent.
And we certainly will talk about the bully boss as well, but this is also just having coworkers who are real pains in the butt, too.
One thing about this, about writing this book, I'm generally a research psychologist, but I've sort of become a bit of Dr. Phil, and I didn't plan on this, but I get this constant stream of emails from people who face abusive supervision, and one of the most interesting ones was from actually an animal control officer. And she described how they had one coworker who was constantly abusive and racist. And actually, in this case, it was interesting. They put together what she called the A-dash diaries, and they documented it well enough that her coworker was fired. But, I mean, she described the behavior. It was just horrible.
Well, give us sort of maybe I don't need a description of who is a real jerk in the workplace, but just typical behavior of somebody like this.
Well, to me, there's two parts of it. One is how do they leave people feeling? Mm-hmm. So one of the classic things is somebody who leaves a trail of people who feel de-energized and demeaned. To me, that would be sort of the typical effect. But it's everything from insults. Teasing is actually often very powerful, that people say, "I'm just joking," can put somebody down. And then some of the other things that some of the surveys will show will be political backstabbing, and then finally something which I hadn't realized how prevalent and powerful it is, It's this feeling of being invisible. So I got this incredible email from a legal secretary in San Francisco, and she described how one of the senior attorneys in the law firm walked by her about 35 or 40 times a day, and she said he'd give me orders over email, but he would never acknowledge me as a human being.
Mm.
So there's a range of ways in which they do their dirty work. The classic way is, of course, the screaming and the insults, which does happen, but there's more subtle means as well.
So it's certainly, you know, a pain in the butt if you work with someone like this, and certainly
right.
if you work for someone like this. But is it really that big of a deal? How we just deal with it.
Well, that's one approach. Mm. You can just deal with it. There's actually been a lot of research both in the United States and the UK, and the range of negative effects are, first of all, it's quite well documented that people who have bully bosses or aggressive, nasty bosses suffer higher physical and mental health problems.
Mm-hmm.
Another problem, and this is something that has become more and more clear since I've studied this, is that it's actually a contagious disease. So emotions are very contagious. So people who work for bully bosses often become bullying themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So you've probably heard of this sort of kiss up, kick down sort of phenomenon. So if you work for a kick down boss, the odds are you might kiss up, but you might start kicking down your own subordinates
mm-hmm.
because it's contagious. And then finally, in terms of the financial costs, which is something I talk a lot about in the book, there's a whole bunch of evidence that they have what seem like hidden costs but are actually to the company but are actually bad once you start calculating them. And in one case, there's a local Silicon Valley software company that I've worked with some, and they told me about their local jerk named Ethan. And so Ethan's in the book, and he was their star salesperson. But when they calculated all the assistance he burned through, his anger management training, all the extra time that management took with him, they figured out that it cost an extra $160,000 a year for, if you will, sort of like jerk taxes or of a-hole taxes for Ethan. So there's a lot of cost.
Yeah, this is really bad for business to tolerate the a-holes in the office.
Right. The one other thing which I should add is, so I've spoken to a couple of law firms recently,
mm-hmm.
and there's a whole bunch of lawyers out there banding together who are going to start suing for what they call the behavior of equal opportunity jerks. So, and it's really one of those they probably use a more technical term, but that's what they would call it to me. It used to be that if you're just racist or sexist, that's clearly against the law. But if you're an equal opportunity jerk, well, that was unclear. But there's been some recent cases that suggest that if you're nasty to everyone, that it can cost money. And you know how litigation attorneys are. They see an opportunity, they're going to start going after organizations. So that's another reason not to let people get away with it. You'll have the lawyers at your door.
Yeah, so that's the no a-hole rule is don't put up with this. Or what
right.
is the no a-hole rule?
Well, to me, I mean, it's the general rule, not at the most simple level, but I'll give you some examples of firms that I've worked with that use it. At the most simple level, it's simply not allowing them to get in the door. And when they act nasty, not allowing them to get away with it. But where, to me, it gets interesting is both when I was writing the book and since I wrote it, I've worked with a whole bunch of companies and managers that actually use the rule. And sometimes it's in more polite language and sometimes in the same language. And sort of exhibit one is out here in San Mateo, California, we've got a company called Success Factors.
Mm-hmm.
So if your listeners go to the Success Factors website, they actually can see the CEO, Lars Dalgaard, in one of the pictures standing in front of a sign that says, no a-holes. I mean, he's really proud of it. And so they're the fastest-growing software firm, over $30 million. And what Lars, who is really quite interesting, does is he has everybody who he hires sign a contract saying they won't be a jerk. And to me, even more, so that's, you look for them in the selection, you sort of screen it out. And then the other thing about Lars that's really interesting is he's very good about acknowledging humanity, and he accepts that people are going to blow it every now and then and lose their temper because we're all human, we're all capable of being temporary jerks. In his view, is the most important thing is what happens when somebody blows it. So the first time I met Lars, and I've met him a couple of times, He described to me how earlier in the week he had a temper tantrum in a meeting,
mm-hmm.
and he said, I started yelling at the eight people in the meeting. Well, I've worked with corporate America a lot, and the CEO yelling at a meeting is not a very unusual event.
Sure.
But what was unusual about it was that he sent an apology out to all 400 people in the company because he said, I knew it would get out, and I'd broken the rule, and I had to apologize for it and say it was inappropriate. So,
well, good for him. I mean, that the CEO apologizing, that's unusual. But what should the CEO do if it's the managers or a certain superstar worker who's the jerk?
Well, I think that really is kind of the acid test or the key test of an organization, whether it actually does care about enforcing the rule when you've got somebody who is a star and is consistently a jerk and demeaning. If you just say, and I'm thinking of like some law firms that I work with where they'll have like the star rainmaker and they just shrug their shoulders or run and hide from him or her, and they say that's just the way they are. But there's a couple of major law firms I work with. One that's located in Washington State called Perkins Coie, and they just don't tolerate that sort of behavior, and they'll get rid of rainmakers if they're consistently abusive. And so to me, that's where things really hit the road is when you've got somebody who's consistently abusive and is a rainmaker, and whether or not you do something about it.
We are talking about what to do about all those bullies, creeps, jerks, tyrants, you put the name on it, who you work with or maybe work for. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Do you work with someone like this or for someone like this? Does your company do a good job in making sure that this isn't tolerated? We're talking with the author of The No A-Hole Rule, Building a Civilized Workplace and Surviving One That Isn't, Robert Sutton. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Robert Sutton is also a professor of management science and engineering at Stanford University and has consulted for numerous Fortune 500 companies. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Elizabeth Edwards will be joining Kathleen Dunn this morning after 10 o'clock. Elizabeth Edwards, wife of presidential candidate John Edwards, will be joining Kathleen for about a half an hour after 10 o'clock to talk about women in politics and her husband's bid for the White House. Then Kathleen will welcome in another guest to talk about the overall role of spouses during the 2008 presidential campaign. That's later this morning. We are talking with Robert Sutton, who is author of the new book, The No A-Hole Rule, Building a Civilized Workplace and Surviving One That Isn't. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We are looking for your stories of those jerks that are in your workplace and how you deal with it or have dealt with it. And Chris in Barron is our first caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I was really interested in this topic. I actually have had an experience with some a-holes in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
I unfortunately had the experience of working in a very small professional office. We're talking one boss, 2 to 3 professional employees, and like 1 or 2 support persons. And the boss had a tendency to create one of the professional employees as the golden child who could do no wrong. And any idea that I had, not being the golden person of the month, was belittled, ignored until that person presented it. And then I was presented with the question of, why can't you come up with ideas like that?
Oh, that would really irritate me. Yeah,
yeah, it was really a problem. And then the boss tended to also belittle people's personal lives. My father passed away of cancer, and I had to go home for 2 months to help take care of him and take care of family things. And when I got back, I was told, well, thanks for coming back. It took you long enough. Now get over it. Get back to work. And by the way, you have no weekends. And we're cutting your paycheck to $50 every 2 weeks till you pay me back for the time you were gone. and just very no understanding. It was horrible. So I'm just kind of curious. The examples that I've heard so far were for people who were in, you know, are in larger workplaces, have kind of the whole corporate structure. But just curious, is there any way that the rules in this book or the studies that the author has looked into can be applied to a smaller workplace and maybe be helpful in that kind of situation?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, that's a horrible story, and I hope you're not working there anymore.
No, now I work for a large educational cooperative.
Oh, good. I'm glad that. Well, I mean, first, you know, my first reaction is that I'm glad you got out, because that's when you're in a situation where things are bad. Sometimes people stay on, and maybe they are trapped. But the best thing to do is to get out. But yes, in fact, the two samples that I talked about were just random probability samples of large populations. So they include large and small offices. And in fact, I've studied some and gotten a lot of emails about small offices. And to your point, I think one of the things about small offices is they're worse for a couple of reasons. One is it sounded like you had nowhere to go. I mean, it wasn't like you could transfer to another division or hide from your boss because you were in a larger organization. So that's one way that they're worse. The other way in which they're worse, which is unfortunate but true, is that if you're working for a large employer and they're doing stuff that's unlawful, sometimes it's easier to get either press attention or to get a group of lawyers to go after them. So if that was happening at a large company like General Motors, they would be called on the carpet immediately, for example. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, small offices are worse. And the other thing is very often that management is not trained in the law, just because they eventually became a manager. The one thing, though, that does strike me that is similar to large offices is that once you start having these people who are winners and losers, and mm-hmm. management starts treating them like that, to me, that's one of the basis of where the nastiness occurs, because what you do is you turn people against one another, and when management goes through life with this sort of view that there's a few stars and everybody else is useless, then it's bad for everybody. It's also bad for productivity, by the way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds like you had good ideas and you left the organization, which was bad for them too.
Well, Chris, anything else?
No, yeah. I appreciate that. I don't know if there's any way that people can diffuse that. You know, when you're in that office and maybe you want to stay because you really like everything except for the management style.
Right. That's what I was going to follow up with Robert Sutton. Is here she's in this small office where the boss has apparently a favorite employee, and they're chummy, buddy, and she's on the outside.
Right.
And you know, what does someone do in a situation like that?
Well, that's why, I mean, my first advice for people who are stuck in bad situations is to try to leave. And then if that doesn't work, or even before that, there's the argument. And one of the things that's really has struck me in offices of all sizes is sometimes people who feel abused or oppressed in some ways, when they have the conversation with their boss or their peer and they describe, well, you've been pushing me around, sometimes they're absolutely shocked. And so I think it's at least worth having that conversation, and sometimes it does change people's behavior. But if that doesn't work, then I would go back to, well, it's probably time to start looking for another job.
Yeah, what about the co-worker example who might... She didn't say it was exactly this way, but who steals your ideas all the time? I mean, that would really, really tick me off.
That would drive me crazy. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, though, it sounds like there was sort of almost like an implicit compact between the boss and mm-hmm. the idea stealing coworker, because everybody understood that that Chris wouldn't have a good idea, even though she actually did.
Right.
I mean, the other thing, for managers who are in this situation, that's one of the things to really be careful of, is to start negatively stereotyping or scapegoating employees. The other thing, by the way, is that I'm nearly certain that the actions that he took when Chris's father died were unlawful. I mean, and that's the kind of thing that there is some recourse. But at least I would not want to stay in an office like that.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Chris, for the call. We're talking with Robert Sutton, who is a professor of management science and engineering at Stanford University and the author of The No A-Hole Rule, talking about the jerks and bullies and tyrants in maybe your workplace and how these a-holes are bad for business and shouldn't be tolerated. We welcome your stories, your questions for him. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Howard in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I have worked for some horrible, horrible people, but I'm happy to say I currently work for one of the most dynamic, visionary, incredible leaders I've worked for in my entire life. And I think the key word there is leader. You don't, you know, you manage budgets, you manage things, but you lead people and you lead organizations. And I think that just fundamentally in the work in the corporate sector, we have to do a complete mind change from management to leadership. And I'm Doctor, I know that you're a doctor of management science, but I would really think that it should be leadership science and not management, because I think there's a fundamental difference that I think if people thought of themselves as leaders and developed them as leaders instead of managers, the whole corporate sector would be much better. And secondly, I also think that that movies like Office Space and TV shows like The Office, I think they're so popular because there really is a reflection as far as the way things are in the crazy corporate world out there. And I'm interested in your comments, and I'll take those off the air. Thank you very much.
Great, thank you. Well, Howard, I think those were both great comments. First of all, just a comment on the Office is my children think it's funny, but I have a hard time watching it because it's too realistic. I mean, that's an incredibly well-done show. The other thing, just to reinforce Howard's comment, and I'm actually an organizational psychologist, even though that I'm called a professor of management science and engineering. So I always have been interested in what effective leaders or managers do. And one thing that I think is really important is to reinforce Howard's point that gets beyond this notion that leaders like manage budgets and operations is there's actually a great series of studies done by a guy named Rob Cross at the University of Virginia. He's done samples, everything from manufacturing organizations, management consultants, software firms. And what he finds is he looks to see, well, what kind of managers are in networks of people that are most effective and what sort of managers tend to get ahead and become leaders. And he asks this one question that turns out to be the best predictor over and over again, which is he surveys the coworkers of the person and he asks them, after you talk to this person, do you feel like you have more or less energy? So he describes some managers as energizers and some as de-energizers, and it's an incredibly powerful predictor of both the success of the manager or leader and of the group that they're in. So I think that's a great indication of Howard's point is you've got to think about when you talk to people, what's the effect on them? Do they leave sort of feeling bad about themselves and de-energized? Do they leave feeling great about themselves and ready to do an even better job?
Yeah. Howard, are you still there?
Actually, I am.
Yeah, maybe you have a follow-up, but you said you now are working for who you think is, you know, the best leader ever. What makes him or her so great?
Well, part of this, what makes her so awesome is a couple things. One, she has a vision for where she wants her organization to go, and she has imparted that vision onto each of the staff members. Secondly, she really makes everyone feel that we're part of a team. I mean, the buck stops with her. But it's a very much, at least in our organization, a collaborative process. And she also knows how to motivate people in different ways. Some people respond to, hey, you know, you can do this. You just need to give a little more effort. And other people need kind of a kick in the butt. And knowing when and where to apply that appropriately really is what sets an okay leader or an okay manager from an excellent leader or an excellent manager. And I'm just considering myself very fortunate to work for just an awesome, awesome, awesome person.
Yeah, and Howard, all of your coworkers are wonderful and awesome, too?
Well, you know, I'm fortunate enough that it's very much a team where mm-hmm. I work, and I think that's one of the things that separates my organization where I work now versus other organizations. But I think the whole thing about being a leader instead of a manager really, I've seen good leaders in all different types of organizations, and that's what separates the good people from the not-so-good, is that if you're a leader and you look at yourself taking ownership of the people and the vision of where you want to go, that's much better than just thinking, well, I got to come in my budget numbers for this financial quarter, which are really, in the grand scheme of things, meaningless.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Professor Sutton?
So one of the things I really like about the contrast between Howard and Chris's call is it's sort of the difference between a poisonous and a productive workplace.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm hearing from about Howard's boss is that she believes that everybody can do a great job and does not turn them against one another. To me, that's a civilized and also a productive workplace. It's when you start turning people against one another, which, by the way, many organizational performance evaluation processes do, where you rank people into winners and losers, that's where you end up with a problem of dysfunction and conflict and the like. So Howard's lucky, and it sounds like a place that many of us would want to work.
Yeah, it sounds great, Howard. Does a great leader, as opposed to manager, using Howard's preference, make sure that there aren't jerks and bullies and tyrants in the workplace in terms of coworkers?
Well, in fact, I think that's one of the main idea of the book, is that if you start going through, it actually is infused in human resource management policy. So to give you another example, I don't know whether in Wisconsin, do you have Washington Mutual, which is now a
yes, I think I have my mortgage with them.
Oh, yeah. So Washington Mutual is really an interesting bank where they really rose in the 80s under a CEO named Lou Pepper. Mm-hmm. And since the book came out, I've actually had a lot of interaction and conversation with Lou Pepper. And back in the 80s, he said, we made an explicit decision that we were going to hire really smart people but no jerks. In mm-hmm. fact, they used the A word. And, I mean, he said we were very systematic about weeding the ones out who are already in the company. And he said the reason we did it was, well, first, we wanted a civilized workplace. But second, we figured if we were nasty to one another, mm-hmm. it would be hard to be nice to the customer. And customer service was our number one priority. And they're really a quite interesting bank because it's something that is infused in the culture. I mean, and then another example is Southwest Airlines, where they've always hired and fired for attitude. And Herb Kelleher, who's the CEO, describes how he looks to see how pilots not only treat him in the interview or other pilots, but people like the receptionists and the flight attendants. So it is interesting when you look at some of the more effective organizations that they will systematically have civility, if you will, as part of the selection and reward process.
Next, we go to Molly in Plum City. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I totally agree with everything that the previous caller said, and I have a situation. The organization I work for is really wonderful. They do a wonderful job, but there is one coworker who believes that it is his job to save the other people. That it's a sales force, so he feels that he needs to save us all. He is a born-again Christian.
Oh, okay.
And he's using his religion to justify mistreating other people. He'll tell us, oh, you're wrong, you have to do this, and then you'll be saved, and everything will work out. And it's sort of offensive to me, because I was always taught that you don't discuss religion in the workplace, along with politics and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that sounds like a minefield, doesn't it, Robert?
Yep.
Sutton?
It just sounds like a mess. Well, first of all, I mean, Maui is your name?
Molly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that in general, whenever somebody imposes their will, whether it be religion, taste in food, loud taste in music, then to me that's taking away somebody's dignity. So I think that's bad. The other thing, which is ironic, so I'm not even Christian, I'm Jewish, and when I wrote this book, I didn't think very much of Christians. So I don't know, maybe you can use this to defend yourself against your coworker. It turns out that one of the weirdest things that happened in writing this book is I've got sort of like a small army of Christians, everything from priests to people leading Bible studies class, who believe that the no a-hole rule is something that should be applied to Christians themselves. And in fact, so if you look at my blog, which is bobsutton.net, there's actually a cartoon where a guy is at the pearly gates, And he's being excluded, and it says, you were a believer, yes, but you skipped the not being a jerk about it part. So it sounds to me like this guy is failing the test of his own religion. So it's applying the rule at the highest level. You can look at my blog. And so I think that he's actually violating Christian values, ironically, and I think many people would agree with me. So Molly, that might be the defense you have.
Thanks a lot, Molly, for the call. We're talking with Robert Sutton, who is author of The No A-Hole Rule, Building a Civilized Workplace and Surviving One That Isn't. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest has some advice on how to deal with mean-spirited people in a negative work environment. Those tyrants, bullies, or egomaniacs that you might work for or with. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen and her guest will talk about the effects of the troop surge in Iraq and with the 3-month-old security crackdown going on in Baghdad. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking with the author of The No A-Hole Rule, Building a Civilized Workplace and Surviving One That Isn't. Robert Sutton is a professor of management science and engineering at Stanford University. And the cost of nastiness in the workplace is really bad for business, according to our guest, and that business should not tolerate a-holes, should not hire them, and should get rid of them if they can't reform themselves. It says here that 50-80% of nastiness in the workplace is directed by superiors to their subordinates. 20-50% of nastiness is between co-workers of the same rank, and less than 1% of nastiness is directed at superiors by underlings. But there, you did have a story, didn't you, Professor Sutton, of a employee who gave her boss X-lax because she was so tired of it all?
Oh yeah, well, so this was, in fact, it was from a radio producer at a national public radio show. So
name names, no.
I will not name names. I think it was in an earlier job. So what happened was that she had a boss who kept stealing her food off her desk and eating it. And in fact, we were talking about power dynamics, and there's a little academic literature on this, that one of the way that people lord over people are through food things, by taking their food, by telling them what to eat, by criticizing what they eat. There's a whole bunch of power issues around food. So her boss kept stealing her food off her desk, and so what she finally did was she made some candies out of X-lax and put them on her desk, and of course he happily walked up and ate them without asking permission, and she exacted her revenge. Now, you don't usually get to do something that dramatic, but I thought that, and she, of course she told him what was in it because that was part of the fun. But I sort of like that.
Can he say that was an a-hole thing to do? You're fired.
I don't know. I don't know the employment law about that, but yeah. I think that if you steal from somebody, you deserve what you get. I would love to hear the employment lawyers involved with that. But the point of that story to me is not just the sort of funny part. It's that sometimes people who are in positions of less power are incredibly creative at finding ways to fight back. And then the other thing, and so this is more of a sort of corporate America story, that in our culture, very often we will tolerate people who are jerks or creeps as long as they're performing well. But one thing that I think we're starting to see in corporate America is less tolerance, that everything's fine if you're a jerk as long as things are going well. But when things go badly, you very quickly find you have no friends and you're gotten rid of very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
This happened to Bob Nardelli at Home Depot, and another example out in my neck of the woods, Carly Farina, who wrote a book and complained mightily about how badly she was treated by the HP board. I know from internal surveys at Hewlett-Packard she was one of the most despised CEOs in history at Hewlett-Packard because she acted like a royal CEO and treated people very badly. And in addition to in her personal behavior, which was generally atrocious from people who worked with her, one of the first things that she did after a large layoff was she bought herself a new L-1011 to travel around in, and that doesn't look very good. You buy yourself a new corporate jet after laying people off.
Yeah, not good at all. Kristen in Madison is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy. Hi, Professor Sutton.
Hi.
Unfortunately, I could probably talk to you for hours about my husband's former employer.
Oh, no.
I finally, after a couple of years, convinced him to quit. His immediate supervisor was a bully and really emotionally harassed him every day. And he was the golden child. And when my husband would go and complain to the owner about the things that he was doing, he wouldn't believe him. And there's a couple things about this situation that I was kind of wondering. One is my husband is an immigrant, and I'm wondering if you've done any research or have any information about, you know, the discrimination. And my husband is a white male legal immigrant, and it's shocked me how much discrimination he's encountered over the past 17 years that he's been in this country. And the other thing is this manager actually called the police on my husband twice. Once because he said he overheard him saying he was going to commit suicide. The second time was because he said that my husband was going to bring a gun to work and shoot the place up, which my husband never said. So my husband actually had a police officer visit him twice on the job in response to these false allegations. And after that second time, I told my husband, you have to get out of there because you're going to wind up getting arrested.
Well, I hope he did. Did he? Was he able to get out of there? Yeah, I mean, that's unbelievable.
He did, but he's so stubborn. You know, he was so angry. He's like, I don't want him to be able to get away with this. And I'm just saying, you know what, just get out of there, wash your hands of it, and forget about it. But, you know, all this behavior was condoned by the owner of the business. So, you know, in my opinion, from my perspective, you know, not being the employee, but I said, you can't win in that situation. You need to leave.
Yeah. Robert Sutton?
Well, I mean, a couple of things. It's hard to know all the details. The first thing is, for Kristen is that I can hear it in your voice that, I mean, there's lots of evidence that when people work for bullies, it doesn't just affect them personally, but it can have strong spillover effects to their family life. And, you know, I've had the same experience of my wife working with people who are abusive. And, it spills over. So the effects aren't just on the worker. They're on family and personal relationships as well. The other thing is, from what I'm hearing is that it sounds like somebody is mentally ill but incredibly good at managing up to their boss. And when you've got somebody who's very good, and it sounds like this is a classic sort of kiss up, kick down sort of person, or maybe kick sideways sort of person. And in a situation like that, I can't think of anything to do except to get out, because it sounds like Kristen's husband went and confronted the boss and tried to explain what was going on. But when people don't believe you, I can't figure out any other thing to do but to get out. And in terms of him being facing bias as an immigrant, I think that's something that happens all over the world. So it's unfortunate, but it's true.
Thank you, Kristen, for the call. Many other callers waiting right now. Bernard in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I'm a professor here at a big university in Madison, Wisconsin, and Professor Sutton's presentation is very, very timely. Our department happens to be meeting tomorrow in connection with approving the transfer of one member of the department who was bullied. The problem is, though, that this person is really the third person who's been bullied and has decided to leave the department. So it'll be pretty much automatic consent business. But I wanted to bring up a motion at the meeting, and have been talked out of it, that we look into the matter and try to find out what's been wrong and how we could right things. I was talked out of it because it's alleged that it will be too much trauma for this person to learn about this discussion, and that we ought to just go along with her request to be transferred. The bully in question has really been bullying now for about 20 years. I've endured it just trying to ignore him. But his style of bullying, at least as far as I'm towards me, has been to tell me that what I'm working on is irrelevant to the subject of our department's interest, and that it doesn't belong in the department, and therefore I don't belong in the department. As I say, I've endured it and done my best to ignore it, but he hasn't been able, he's succeeded in getting through to three people who decided that it's best to get out of the department. So
And this person doesn't have a boss who thinks differently.
The boss is a feckless chairman. In fact, interesting the difference between managing and leading. In relation to department chairs, we talk about the difference between a department chair and a department manager. Department chairman is feckless. He's unable to deal with this person. The reason this person, the way in which this person makes rain is by bringing in lots of grant money and running a student training program that's brought in money, and so he can do no wrong. When I saw this starting about 10 years ago, I brought this to the attention of one of our deans, and his response was, "We do not get involved." Yeah. Unfortunately, what this dean did not realize was one way or another, the dean's office will get involved when it becomes a matter of trying to get a replacement for one of the people who left and having to come up with a recruitment package of about $500,000, which is the standard, which is the amount that is used, that is needed in order to start a new assistant professor. Any comments, Professor Sutton?
Oh, well, first of all, I'm an academic, so this story actually rings way too true. And one of the problems in academia is that unlike in a traditional structure, you have a situation where actually the administrators don't have that much power. And to Bernard's point, when people bring in lots of grant money, it's sort of like being a great salesperson. They're hard to push around. But one thing, you know, and it might be worth going back to whoever the new dean and administrator's view is to explain to them what is going to happen. Because it sounds like this person is causing all sorts of problems. But in academia, I know how difficult it is. In fact, one thing that I might recommend for your provost, dean, and maybe department chair, there's a great book called The College Administrator's Survival Guide. It's a Harvard Press book, and it describes the process of dealing with the bullies in academia. And the only way I can figure out in academia how to, if you will, deal with somebody like that, and it sounds like Bernard's doing the right thing, is you've got to bring together a band of people to fight against the person. Because if you hear about all the people who are leaving and the damage done by somebody like this, in the end, it opens you up to lawsuits, and it also damages the spirit of the department.
Thank you, Bernard, very much for the call. Nick in Wauwatosa is with us now. Hi, Nick.
Good morning. I once worked for a female boss in a large organization. There were several male middle managers, I being one of them, and several female middle managers. And the male middle managers were subjected to probably what a lot of women have been subjected to in the workplace. And we referred to it as living in Wonderland with Alice and at the Mad Hatter's Tea Party.
You were harassed?
Well, it was interesting because there were some times when you could just be lauded for your performance, but sometimes the harder you worked, the more subjected you were to to vituperation and being put down. So the men in the organization would, if you were called on the carpet, you'd come out and say, I just spent an hour with Alice. So we were, we had to find a number of mixed metaphors. So finally, as men, we referred to it as being moiled. And I think you'd appreciate that you would go in and you'd come out absolutely, totally disheartened. It was a very, very unusual situation because I think the men who worked in the organization developed a very strong empathy for what women have had to go through much more in a male-dominated workplace.
And Nick, you say she was doing this to the male middle managers, but not the female middle managers.
Oh no, yeah. the, female middle manager. In fact, the female middle managers were called into the meetings to witness the males being dressed down.
Wow. What do you think of that, Professor Sutton?
Well, it sounds to me like, well, first of all, it's sexism. Of course, it's against the law. But the other part about this, which I think is very important, is that nastiness is something that comes in both genders.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just sounds to me, and I think that the caller has the right point, which is that no matter what direction it's going, it's not only probably emotionally destructive, it's just bad for the organization. And so to me, that's just another sort of stripe of managerial incompetence.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
I was going to take one last call before we run out of time from Tina in Waukesha. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I had a question about the legal recourse that an employee might have when HR doesn't protect them from a harassing situation. A good friend of mine worked for an organization for 20 years. A fairly new supervisor was very verbally harassing her, even to the point of possibly physically throwing chairs around the room and things like that. And when she finally had her last straw and went to HR about this person and said, I can't take it, I'm going to quit, rather than saying, well, you're in a harassing situation, you have rights as an employee, they pretty much helped her out the door and said, well, here's your COBRA, blah, blah, blah. So what type of laws would protect an employee from something like this?
Well, so it's interesting. So I've been actually talking to a lot of employment lawyers lately, and it used to be clear that being an equal opportunity jerk was maybe not against the law, but there's emerging case law that shows that that if somebody is a jerk, you have a legal recourse. And in fact, there's probably armies of lawyers that would be happy to help her. But to anybody who's in this situation, the most important advice I can give you is to carefully document what the person does, because that's what either HR or a lawyer is going to ask for. And there was one person I had a lot of interaction with who had leukemia and was bullied by his boss because his productivity went down. And one of the reasons he was able to get rid of his boss was he had so carefully documented what was done. So throwing a chair is a good sort of start for your list, but you've got to document it. If you just go in and say, I work for a jerk, and then somebody says, well, give me some examples, and you don't have one, either HR or the lawyer is not going to be able to help you very much.
Well, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks.
We appreciate your time. Robert Sutton, a professor of management science and engineering at Stanford University, consultant to many Fortune 500 companies, and author of the new book, The No A-Hole Rule: Building a Civilized Workplace and Surviving One That Isn't. How to survive all of those jerks in the workplace, either that you work with or for. Thanks to Leo Duran, our on-air producer, and to Carmen Jackson, who produced this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. I hope you stay tuned. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.